minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, episode 223. I am your host, once again, Matt Fralick. You can find me on Twitter at @Matt_FRA_. Alongside me again, the lovely, studious, and hockey fanatic, Janelle Mackey. That's three things I gave you. Normally, it's just one little tidbit.
Look at that. I mean, I guess March just has you feeling happy or something. So.
Well, it is March Madness.
I mean, I guess we're in a good mood because we're the fourth best Pack-A-Day podcast team.
So. According to one person's opinion, though.
I mean, like the opinion.
I appreciate her opinion. Maybe someone else would think we're number one. Probably our parents, perhaps, maybe roommates. But Janelle, what's going on? We're just out of the combine. We're in the cold winter in Wisconsin still. It's not leaving us, but dudes are still running around in Indianapolis in their skivvies and spandex and seeing who can touch cones faster. What did you see from the combine, if anything?
I mean, I'm still in college, so I'm pretty busy even on the weekends. So I didn't get to see much other than some highlights here and there on social media, kind of some people's takes, kind of, okay, is this somebody we want to see on the team? Is this, oh, are we kind of hesitant now after seeing their results? Not really anything in particular, though. What did you see?
My question, I guess, follow up, but there was no arm sizes or hand sizes that were concerning to you that for anyone that they measured in, nothing like that?
I guess I didn't really see much of that.
It's a joke. People make a big deal about it.
I know. I think like Kyler Murray's
came out
and it was just like, oh man, like the measurements are out. So yeah.
He still had 10 fingers.
Yeah.
Well, 8 fingers and 2 thumbs,
and 2
thankfully.
Thumbs. I count thumbs as fingers.
I agree.
So at least we agree on that. But
no, what I saw from it was DK Metcalf is a created player on Madden. He's an absolute monster. That was kind of the takeaway I had up until about Saturday and Sunday. Sunday, I actually got up kind of early, considering it was a weekend, and I was just sitting there. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to throw on NFL Network, and I watched some of the combine. It was great. First guy I saw run the 40 was Quinnen Williams for Bama, the D tackle, and dude is incredible. I think he had a faster 40 time than a couple defensive ends. I don't remember exactly who, but just an absolute beast. It kind of solidified my thought already going into the draft that there's a lot of really good linebackers and outside edge guys in this draft. I mean, Marquez Sweet runs a 4.4140. That's stupid fast. I think that was faster than Odell Beckham is the stat I saw. Brian Burns, my guy from Florida State. I'm all in on Brian Burns right now. When people ask me, friends of mine or whoever, who's the 12th pick, I'm going, you know, hopefully it's edge, but I want it to be Brian Burns. I don't really care who it is because there's like 5 guys outside of Josh Allen who I know won't be there that I'd like the Packers to get, but he's just the name I'm going to stick with for now.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, the only thing I was kind of disappointed in regard to outside linebacker was J.K. Polite, the guy from Florida. Maggie and Jacob kind of broke it down yesterday in episode 222, and kind of Maggie was saying early on in the podcast that this may have had him slip to day 2 or 3. So maybe a potential value pick, but I think he only ran like a 4.8440, which is extremely, extremely slow. And I just remember that Quinnen Williams actually ran a faster 40 time than him. And he's like 40 pounds heavier. Kind of strange.
Crazy.
It is. Quick update on just the NFL. A lot of tags going out today. When Janelle and I did our episode about, I guess it had been about a month ago, we were talking about where the Packers should address needs, whether it be in, you know, free agency or in the draft. It'd be at this point four defensive linemen, I guess defensive ends, were tagged today. Frank Clark, Dee Ford, Jadeveon Clowney, DeMarcus Lawrence. Surprising Jadeveon Clowney got tagged to me because we were talking like initially, Janelle, like how stupid that contract was going to be.
Yeah.
And then Dee Ford, they tagged him. They're still shopping him. There was a report earlier today. You know, we're recording at, what time is it? Probably past my bedtime, 9 o'clock. Justin Houston, they said it, like, there was some Twitter buzz going. He was released. He's not been released. CJ Mosley is more than likely going to be released. And he was a guy when we were doing our breakdown, the episode I'm referencing, I kind of looked at him at middle linebacker and I'm like, eh, I figure the Ravens will hang on to him and they're going to release him, which is very strange. And Landon Collins, most likely not going to get that franchise tag. That's the other guy.
Yeah, I would like to see Landon Collins put the G on his helmet.
Did you see the Instagram post? Someone had put,
reposted
HaHa Clinton Dix in the number, obviously, 21 jersey. And Landon Collins is creeping around the comments being like, damn, thought that was me. And I'm like, Twitter just, like, exploded for, like,
or,
a half a minute.
What was it when they said his locker hadn't been cleaned out yet? Mm-hmm. And he's like, anything there doesn't matter to me or something like that. I was just like, oh, man, like, he's ready to leave. He's ready to go somewhere good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but that's not what we're focusing on
today.
We're
not. So, again, Janelle, March is great. I like it for basketball, some free agency. Combine's really, really cool, but I don't want to talk about –
We want to get away from the usual.
Yeah, we're going to, as I said yesterday when we were texting, when everyone is zigging towards the combine and 40 times and stopwatches, we're going to zag and we're going to go super old school.
We're going to rewind.
Cassette tape. So Janelle and I, when we got together to do the podcast, when we were paired up back in July or August, we started out actually brainstorming and saying, you know, when it becomes slow, we were kind of foreshadowing, in February, March, and April, what the heck are we going to talk about? Because everyone wants to hear new stuff, and we don't want to talk about the next, you know, person that was released that maybe the Packers should sign, yada, yada, yada. Janelle actually brought it up. Let's go through the whole history of the Packers. We were going to do that, but we're going to cut out the non-Super Bowl era just because, for time's sake, we could be in here for 2 hours just talking about the Super Bowl era from the 60s and on. And, you know, even the Acme Packing days. So we're going to start in the 1960s.
Maybe we'll have an episode where we break down pre-Super Bowl era.
The super old school era. The newspaper era. Radio era. So I'm going to start. We're going to go from the 1960s to the current, I guess it would be 2010s. Super weird to say that.
I know. I don't really know how to, like, the 2010s?
The teens? That's not bad.
The teens?
So we're going to start in the 60s. Obviously, you know, in the 60s, that was huge for the Packers. Janelle and I were talking before the before we started recording, and there's about two or three decades where it's like, holy cow, Packers were awesome. Outside of that, you can probably understand if you're a Packer fan when those decades were that were not that.
It's a pretty good sandwich of like.
Yes.
Like dynasty and then like.
A turd sandwich, yes, if you will. Rotten cheese sandwich. So we're going to start in the 60s. We're going to start at 1960. And that is, let me get up here. Paul Hornung scores 176 points. It was an NFL record until 2006 when, do you know who broke the record? I had to look it up.
I do not.
LaDainian Tomlinson for the Chargers broke it in 2006. Okay. It actually had lasted for 46 years. Mind you, in 1960, they only played 12 games, not 16, with LT in his San Diego Chargers at the time. The breakdown for Paul Hornung's 46-year-old record was he had 15 touchdowns, 13 rushing of them, and 2 receiving, 15 field goals, attempting 28. Not even close to a bad Mason Crosby season. Mm-hmm. And then he had, where he got a bulk of them, 41 extra points. No misses.
Wow.
41 for 41, Paul Hornung. Very, very dynamic player. It was amazing that that record to me lasted 46 years. But nonetheless, we go on to 1961. It's the Packers' 7th NFL championship over the New York Giants. Vince Lombardi blows out his former team in the Giants, 71-0. In the first ever title game played in Green Bay, little fun fact, on New Year's Eve as well. Can you imagine how
71-0?
You're of age, right? To drink?
Yes.
You go. Can you imagine Washington Street in 1961 on New Year's Eve after they won a?
That's crazy. A title? Like, what a way to end the year.
Absolutely.
71-0 though. So, like, oh my gosh.
37-0.
Oh, I thought you said 71.
No. Seventh in a row.
Okay. Still. No. Yeah. Still. A blowout.
Absolutely. So, a little darker here. 1965, Curly Lambeau passes away from a heart attack on June 1st. He's buried in the Alloway Catholic Cemetery. For any of those that live in Green Bay or around the area, you know where that is. His birthplace is actually 615 North Irwin Avenue. Fun fact, that is 6 blocks from my house, and I bike past it often. I'll go on runs past it. I drive past it, and it's, guys should check it out. It's pretty cool, real small house, and it's just, it's wild to think that I live 6 blocks away from where he actually grew up. There was some kind of, when they started to figure out where, if that's where actually he was born, there was a tough time pinning that down because, you know, early on when he was born in the 40s,
a crazy stat for everything that ever exists.
Right, and they're just like, hey, you live on that block next to the Johnsons and the Martins, not at, you know, this exact number, and blocks weren't really a thing. He was pretty much Curly Lambeau, that is, was the first star for the Green Bay Packers. He won 6 world championships, and on September 11th of 1965, the City Stadium, which is by East High School, we all know, is changed to Lambeau Field. Many consider the Curly Lambeau era one of the most successful of all time, with him being a part of 212 wins, 106 losses, 21 ties, and 3-2 in the postseason with 6 world championships.
I'd say that's a good dynasty.
Really good. I mean, that's phenomenal. In 1967, so 2 years later, is the Ice Bowl. 21-17 win over the Cowboys for the Packers' third consecutive title in a minus 13 degree balmy temperature at Lambeau Field, the frozen tundra. Bart Starr scores a quarterback sneak with under a minute left. That's basically how they win the game. It's on record to be the coldest game in Green Bay when the game temperature was at minus 13 degrees, as I said. The Packers begin, I think it was in like 1959, so just before we're talking about our decades here.
Just missed the cutoff.
It did. It was, there was only one other sub-zero game besides that at the time, and it was now, and it's the 2007 NFC Championship game against the Giants, which was minus one. I know a lot of people that went to the game, they said it was probably colder than minus one. Fun little story. I don't want to go on a rant here. I went to a game about 2-3 years ago. And I'm standing in line. This is about the Ice Bowl. I'm standing in line at, you know, go to the bathroom, of course. And in front of me is these two gentlemen about my age, maybe a little older. You know, they looked not from around here, we'll say. Mm-hmm. Come to find out they're Hawaiian. Their first time, it's December. First time they've ever been to Lambeau Field. I'm like, cool, man. Like, I love meeting people that have never been to Lambeau before. And I'm standing there talking, and all of a sudden I feel a tap on my shoulder, and I look around, and I look down, and it's this elderly man, probably in his mid-80s. I'm like, is this guy, like, is he in trouble here? Like, does he need to, you know, hustle up ahead of me? And turns out he just wanted to, he heard the conversation I was having with the two brothers in front of me from Hawaii, and he puts in his 2 cents. We kind of got to listen hard, and he goes, this is your guys' first game? They're like, yep. I'm like, well, I've been here before. He's like, great, great. He's like, do you guys remember the Ice Bowl? I'm like, yes, I absolutely do, sir. And they're like, yeah, we've heard of it. He's like, I was 12. I was at the Ice Bowl.
And
it was just this weird, like, Twilight Zone. These two guys who live in Hawaii, first game ever in December in Lambeau, and this guy who's probably going to take a pee in the same urinal he has for 50 years straight. it was a weird thing. So that's my context, I guess, real life for the Ice Bowl.
That's crazy, like meeting somebody who was there.
Yeah. Yeah, he said he was 12, which... I guess. I didn't really do the math. I didn't want to check them. My final stat or highlight, if you will, of the 1960s was 1968. Vince Lombardi steps down as the head coach for the Green Bay Packers but stays the general manager. Phil Bengston takes over as the head coach. He was actually the defensive coordinator at the time. And a little research, it looked like when Lombardi actually was hired back in 1959, Lombardi actually hired him when they both left the Giants together to be his defensive coordinator. You know, that was kind of the transition out of the glory days, if you will, of the 60s. And Janelle will hit us up with the 70s. But I promised Janelle I'd have a fun fact for every decade. So my unique fact, quirky fact, whatever you want to call it, is the first hike in tickets was in 1960 in Green Bay, not in County Stadium as well. So just in Green Bay. Prices went up for the next season. So in 1961... they were $1, and they went up actually to $5.75 for seats between the 30-yard lines. Other sideline seats went from $0.25 to $5. South end zone seats in some sections boosted up to $3.50, while sections in the north stands increased to about $2.50. Prices remained at 75 cents for children. Prices also for the two games in Milwaukee were increased from about $2.50 in the bleachers to $5.75 in the upper and lower grandstand and the mezzanine. I was going to do the math quick, but that's crazy going from $1 to $5.75.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like anything like now in like today's era.
No, Janelle, that's like me going to McDonald's, getting a McDouble, and then being it's $5.75.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
And they're taking away a slice of cheese, but that's a whole different conversation to have. But 1970s, what's going on in the 70s, Janelle?
The sorry years.
Mm-hmm, the start of them.
Not really anything fun to talk about here. I really didn't find anything exciting to talk about, and I'm sure if we had an older listener, they wouldn't be able to tell us anything good about these years either. So I went through, I did the math, I added up all the seasons, so there was only one year in the 70s. It was 1972 was the first time they made it to the playoffs. This is the only time they ever took first in the division with a 10-4 record, and they lost right away to the Redskins. So that's disappointing. Kind of later on, 75, it's Bart Starr takes over. I was kind of watching, the Packers actually made these legacy videos. I don't know if you remember seeing those.
I don't.
And basically what you can do is if you just type in the legacy videos, I just typed in like the 70s, and it was just like a 30-second video about how the people, like the fans basically picked the coach, and they're like, the only person that can get us out of this mess is Bart Starr. And honestly, it looks like statistically it got worse. And they were kind of talking, I can't remember who the gentleman was in the video, but he's basically saying, like, that's not fair. Like, he's a player. He's not a coach. You can't put that pressure on him. And I think once we get to the 80s is the first time he makes it, like, first and only time he makes it to the playoffs.
Okay.
Yeah, it was rough. I did the math, and they had a 57-82-5 record in the 70s. 39%, like, a win percentage, which, yeah. Nothing really to write home about in that. Under Bart Starr in the 70s, they took fourth in the division every year except for 78. And my fun fact for 1978 is that Bobby Douglas, who played quarterback for that one season for the Packers, he went on to be a Hall of Famer quarterback, and he is one of five lefty quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame.
Respect for the lefties. I'm left-handed.
Yep. I was like, I need like a lefty quarterback stat in here. I needed something positive, but
that's super positive. Lefties are awesome.
Exactly. Yeah, so Bart Starr takes over. Hope is still lost. Bart Starr's best record in the 70s was 8-7-1, and that's when they took second in the division, and they still didn't make the playoffs. So, still not good enough. When they went off to play that playoff game in 72, their quarterback was the weakest spot. I think they went through, 30 quarterbacks in the 70s, 80s? They went
through a lot. Something like that, yeah.
They went through a lot, and the Redskins could tell that that was their weakness, and not only did they shut down the quarterback, but John Brockington, who was kind of holding the team together, he had 1,000 yards on the year. They held him to 9 yards on 13 carries.
Not good.
They lost 16-3 in that first round of playoffs, so really, really rough 10 seasons for the Packers, and then the worst of it that I found was the John Hadle trade.
Yeah.
I found
that in my research as well, and I was like, Janelle's definitely going to bring that up in the 70s.
Yeah. It's kind of like the nail in the coffin on a horrible, horrible decade of football. So basically what they do is they acquire Hadle, who is 34 years old, and they acquire him for 5 draft picks. So he better be really good if you're giving
like
up
5 Herschel
draft
Walker
picks.
Type, Julio Jones, where you're moving some stock.
There's not even anybody in the league, like aside from like Aaron Rodgers, who we already have, that I would give up that many picks for. They gave up first and second round picks in 75 and 76, and also their third round pick in 75. So, what was it? They, Chester Markle, who was a kicker from 72 to 80, he said, we traded the farm for him. And they lost it all. They lost everything. He, horrible, horrible trade option. He was with them for two years. He played 22 games with 19 starts. He had a 7-12 record, 9 touchdowns, 29 interceptions.
That's a bad ratio.
Yeah.
I'm not a mathematician, but that's not
good. That's not a good ratio for somebody that you gave up 5 draft picks for.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. You just answered the question. What were they? First and second round picks?
First and second round picks in 75 and 76, and a third round pick in 75 as well.
Wow. You're reading my mind. That's exactly what I was going to ask.
Yeah. So, not really anything to write home about in the 70s. I'm sure anybody who's listening that lived through the 70s probably is mad that I'm even bringing it up.
More than likely.
Not something I lived through, obviously.
Yeah, I just missed it.
So, it's harder for me to kind of feel that pain, but just kind of looking at the stats, there was only one season in the 70s where they had double-digit wins, and that's when they went to the playoffs. So, yeah, 70s. Yikes, we're gonna cut it off there.
Yeah, we can't, I mean, there's not much in the 70s. Go, for a little context, too, while you were talking, I had to double-check what I said about Vince Lombardi. So when you said they lost to the Redskins, That was in the 70s, you said, right?
Yeah, never mind. 72.
I digress. So we move on to the 80s, which is still part of the sorry years, as they call them. The bad era, whatever you want to say.
Bad era, little better.
Little better, yeah. Small improvement era. Again, like Janelle said, not a lot of great things going on as far as on the field, but there are some, I guess, good things as far as the organization goes that I found in the 80s. So we start out in 1983. Ray Nitschke retires. He's considered the best linebacker of the Packers of all time. In 1981, so 2 years before he retired, he was actually elected to the Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Fame. He had a 15-year NFL career with the Packers. And in 1978, he was actually enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, again, ahead of time. And he was the anchor for the defense, you know, in the 60s that I discussed with Vince Lombardi, leading the team to 5 championships and 2 Super Bowl victories. Flash forward then further down to 1983. As Janelle said, Bart Starr had been the coach. He is no longer the coach, released after 8 years. Not overly great, I put down in my notes, and I think that's an understatement. Forrest Gregg, the offensive tackle, formerly of Bart Starr's teammate, is hired as the head coach with a 5-year contract. Once that doesn't work out, he goes back to his alma mater, SMU, who, doing a little more research, click on Wikipedia, when he took over there, they were still under the death penalty for their, recruiting violations at SMU in the late 70s, early 80s, when they had, Eric Dickerson and those types of dudes. So, wild, just weird context. So, he coached until 1988, until he resigns. And then Lindy Infante, who my uncle always tells me about, this offensive guru from the Cleveland Browns, comes over. It was his first time being a head coach. It didn't go great. He was running a type of offense that just wasn't working for the Packers at the time. I've never watched early 1980s tape or late 80s tape of the Packers.
It's been proven that we don't need to.
It's been proven. I just want to know what type of offense he was running. I kind of was, when I was doing my research, I didn't really go and check to see, hey, is he running like a West Coast, under center, I form, spread offense. I want to say it was more of a, sling it around like a run and shoot type offense from what I remember. But nonetheless, Lindy Infante takes over, through that whole, transition from Bart Starr to Forrest Gregg to Lindy Infante. It was just this carousel of, two former players that coached. Mm-hmm. And now we have this guy who's an offensive mastermind, in quotes, coming in. Flashback a little bit, 1985, the Packers built 72 private boxes at Lambeau Field, increasing the stadium capacity to just under 57,000 at 56,926 seats for butts. In 1986, this was kind of a low light as well. Janelle, you talked about the trade. Many people consider this to be the moment the Packers had sunk to rock bottom in the 80s. So defensive end Charles Martin picks up Bears quarterback Jim McMahon, very polarizing player, and slams him to the ground after an interception, probably a good, you know, 2-3 seconds after he actually threw the ball. Many consider it one of the cheapest shots in NFL history, and it ended McMahon's season, actually, that year. Again, just a very low moment for the Packers in the 80s. And as we transition here, I think this is the piece of information that kind of just sets sail to the 90s and on. In 1989, Bob Harlan is elected president and CEO of the Green Bay Packers Corporation. He's credited with keeping the Packers competitive in the free agency era, and with the salary cap, and creating the foundation, which Janelle is going to talk about, of the Packers being able to get to and winning their 12th World Championship in Super Bowl 31. He helped build the Don Hutson Center, the first indoor practice facility in all of professional sports.
Fun fact.
Go ahead.
I love
fun facts.
We're all about the fun facts here.
Mm-hmm.
I was like a practice player here for UW Green Bay softball.
Okay.
And they let the softball and the soccer teams practice inside the Don Hutson Center.
Weird.
So I have.
What's it like in there?
It's like, I mean, they
is
have
it kind
their,
of underwhelming?
They have their banners. Like, okay. When you're like a diehard
That's
Packer
cool.
fan and
That's
you like
cool.
go use the bathroom, you're like, oh my gosh, all these players have been in this bathroom. Like, you get a little like football nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
But
did the field smell? Like that weird, you know,
it
that
didn't.
BO smell. Really?
No, it didn't. Mm. But I think we
good ventilation.
We were kind of there, kind of in the spring.
Okay.
So it was a little bit before that they were getting to it.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
So it didn't have their little wear and tear, but
I hear you.
I've been inside there, and they have like
That's
their
awesome.
Championship flags, and you're just kind of like, all right, no big deal. I'm just.
It just looks like to me
practicing
like
a, playing ball in here.
It looks like just a big white pole building. That's why I'm like.
It
that's
looks
why I said it's
like
underwhelming.
An airplane hangar, like. It just looks like there's probably concrete inside it, like people are storing ATVs and stuff in
That's,
it. But
yeah. Or airplanes.
Or airplanes, yep.
A few more things with Bob Harlan. He was the one that decided to move all of the Packer games to Lambeau Field instead of at Milwaukee County Stadium. He renovated Lambeau Field, adding the Pro Shop and getting the Packer Hall of Fame actually on site at 1265 Lombardi Avenue. He started the fourth stock raising program, which is later on here, and ended up, you know, I know I'm getting more into your era. It's a good transition, I guess. Hiring Ron Wolf, trading for a few other players, signing a few other players. I don't want to name who.
They all know who.
Yeah.
But I'll bring it up, too.
My Snapple fact of the 1980s, if you will. In the early 1980s, the Packers were playing so poorly, the team considered placing a dome on top of Lambeau Field. I don't know what they would call it. Maybe like the thawed tundra?
The slightly warmer tundra.
Was that a dad joke? So that was the 80s. So we're trending. We're trending
yeah,
positively.
Yeah, a very, very gradual, like, very, it was a patient incline.
That's so nice. Such a nice way to say it.
Yeah.
So 1990s.
Yes.
I was born in 1990, Janelle. What's going on in the beautiful 90s?
New era. New era, new team, new football, new Packers.
Mm-hmm.
So
because of Bob Harlan.
Exactly. 1992, Mike Holmgren comes in. He becomes the head coach, and in his first season, he has a 9-7 record. So that's positive. New coach, positive record. And then that same year that he comes in, everyone's beloved Brett Favre, he takes over the quarterback role for Green Bay in the fourth game of the 92 season. And as a starter, he went 8-5. So, again, these are positive stats.
Mm-hmm.
Considering I had to look at the 70s, these are very positive stats.
Mm-hmm.
And Brett Favre, in the 90s, he went to the Pro Bowl in 92, 93, 95, 96, 97. So, these are good things. Packer fans are happy.
Mm-hmm.
They're happy early on. And then 93... arguably the biggest signing in Packer history, Reggie White. We all knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They acquire Reggie White for, I think, might have been like a $17 million
It was
contract.
A big deal at the time. It was,
yeah,
they spent
is,
some money for
him. Which is big at that time.
Yeah.
So, yes, they get him in here. And he only played 6 seasons with the Packers, but in those seasons he had 1 interception for 46 yards. He had 14 forced fumbles and 8 fumbles recovered, 301 combined tackles, 239 solo, and 62 assisted. And regardless the stats, like, anything you read about him, it's like, he's the best.
Yeah.
He's unstoppable. Like, you are afraid when he steps on that field. He's the one person you don't want to see step onto defense.
Yeah. Impactful on and off the field, too. I mean, he did a lot for the Green Bay community and is remembered by, you know, with outside of what he did inside, you know, the hash marks, he was an incredible person in this community.
Yeah, he really turned around Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, scary dude on the field, but very impactful in the community. Yes, he will be remembered for all of it. That's safe to say. Not just his stats, but who he was as a person and a player. So, we have Holmgren, we have Favre, we have Reggie White. Mm-hmm. And then, finally, after 29 seasons, we have the Lombardi Trophy back home. So, the Lombardi Trophy comes back to Titletown on January 26, 1997. I was born in 96, so I was born just in time. Yeah, so they beat the Patriots 35-21 in Super Bowl 31 to end their drought. Crazy, almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. Like, after being such a dynasty early on, to have to go through all that. And it's like, to the fans who stayed with them, like, true loyalty. I can't even imagine. I mean, I was not even 6 months old at the time, so I don't exactly remember.
I remember watching the game because my parents actually went to the game, so watching it with my grandma and grandpa, and, like, I remember certain parts of it. Granted, I'm, like, 6 or 5 and a half at the time, so I remember some of it. I remember, like, a big, like, pre-Super Bowl party in elementary school. It was, like, just wild, you know what I mean? Had my Robert Brooks jersey on, eating just Doritos and Capri Suns, just going nuts, but awesome game. Loved it.
Yeah, I do. I have the newspaper of Reggie White running with the Lombardi Trophy.
Nice.
I have that one framed above my bed. So even though I don't remember it, I'll remember it forever because obviously over time you can watch these games and fantastic. Like, obviously a huge moment in Packer history. So anyone listening probably is like, yes. Finally, after all those years, finally came back. And in that game, Desmond Howard makes history because he's the first special teams player to win the MVP award after a 99-yard touchdown return.
Such a great play.
Amazing. Like, that's definitely something that I remember every time I think about that game. Mm-hmm. Like, Brett Favre not winning the MVP because of Desmond Howard is crazy and well-deserved. And being the Patriots, too, like, being able to say you beat the Patriots. But, unfortunately, the next year, they did have back-to-back appearances, but unlike Super Bowl I and II, they could not go back-to-back. They ended up losing to the Broncos 31-24.
Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah. I don't remember that one either, so.
No, I remember that one.
Hurts a little less.
I remember that one more. It was, they shouldn't have lost that game, really. I mean, they had the game won in the first half and just let it slip away.
But, yeah, my fun fact for the 90s, Leroy Butler, who you should all know if you don't, the fun fact about him, he invented the Lambeau Leap in 93, December 26th, 1993, after a fumble recovery and a lateral by none other than Reggie White. So, naturally, White's involved in that. I think it became more famous later on. I can't remember who made it a little bit more famous, but
Robert Brooks, I think it was.
Okay, yeah.
That's like a weird thing. It's because other people were still doing it. I think Robert Brooks, like, did it more consistently, but there were still guys who were like, oh, Leroy and Rob are doing that. Like, I'm going to get in the stands too. Why not?
Exactly. So, yeah, 90s. Way more fun to talk about than the 70s and the 80s. So, and it only gets more fun. So we're going to transition over into the 2000s, the millennial.
Yeah, the new millennial. Y2K. So I kind of view the 2000s as another transition period, but more in like a front office standpoint. So what I remember, and I talked to other people about this, is Mike Holmgren was kind of wanted to have more control over the team, and it just wasn't working. They didn't have that going on. So basically what happened was Bob Harlan names Mike Sherman to succeed Ron Wolf as GM. So Mike Sherman comes in, I think Holmgren had been gone for a year or two at this point, and they're kind of just like, hey, Here you go, Mike Sherman. Here's the reins, what Mike Holmgren wanted. That was my interpretation of it. So he hires, Wolf retires, actually, then as executive vice president and general manager, position he had held since 1991, and brought in all those impactful guys that Janelle had mentioned. Reggie White, Brett Favre, you know, you can go down the line. And while, you know, leading the Packers to a Super Bowl back-to-back years, and again, like I said, kind of weird because Holmgren wanted to get that spot. They said no, and then they hired Mike Holmgren to do it, Mike Sherman to do it. And Mike Holmgren goes out of his way and goes to Seattle and kind of gets what he wanted there. Kind of a weird timing thing. 2001, Brett Favre signs a quote-unquote lifetime contract with the intention that he'll finish his playing career with the team.
Yikes.
2000,
a dark time.
Dark time. 2003. December 22nd, in the Oakland Coliseum, Brett Favre has one of the most incredible football games I will never forget, because he throws for 399 yards, 4 touchdowns, and a Monday night win less than 24 hours after his father's death. I have chills anytime I talk about that, and I have, like, real chills, because I was in the hospital myself. I had hurt my lower back in a freak sledding accident, believe it or not. So I'm in a hospital bed. I had been there for like 2 days, and like, I'm like, this sucks. Like, I don't know if I'm going to have back surgery or what. I didn't have to, thankfully. Nothing really major got hurt, because I was young, 13, 14 years old. So your body heals. But I remember, I'm like, what am I going to do tonight? Well, it's football. I'm like, Packers are on Monday Night Football. Like, I love Monday Night Football. And I remember, you know, hearing the news about Brett Favre's dad dying, but it's not like, you know, where I am now, where I'm on Twitter and I'm just like, refresh, yeah, search, and I can get all this information. Like, I probably didn't even know that until 6 o'clock before the game starts. And I remember they're talking about it, and you can see Diana on the field, you can see Favre, and I mean, the throws he was making in that game were typical Brett Favre throws. Like, they're a little bit more accurate, but he was forcing stuff, and dudes were making plays. Like, everyone was catching everything.
I remember Donald Driver saying, like, anything he puts up, we're coming down.
That's exactly the thing. I couldn't remember who said that, but
I'm 99% sure it was Donald Driver. And
yeah,
another well-respected player.
Absolutely. Too. And that was just one of those games where I'll never forget that, because, I mean, he didn't have to play in that game. Like, people would have been like, all right, cool. Just yeah, take it off. We're good. We're playing Oakland. Like, I think Oakland was pretty decent at the time, too. But, I mean, throws for almost 4 Bills, 4 touchdowns, and they win it Monday night. John Madden's going crazy.
Yeah. It's definitely something, like, I don't remember watching it. I don't know if I even watched it when I was younger. I'm sure it was on TV and I was somewhere playing with, like, Polly Pockets or something. But every time I rewatch it, like, I get emotional, mm-hmm, like, when I read about it, when mm-hmm I watch it. Even just, like, talking about it, because it's, like, there's so many emotions that go into a moment like that. And for Brett Favre, somebody who loves football more than most players mm-hmm ever will,
mm-hmm,
and somebody who is so influenced by his father, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just crazy what happened in a game where he didn't even have to play. And the respect, too, from Oakland, a team whose fan bases are not the nicest people.
No.
They gave him the standing ovation when he walked out on that field. And
as they should.
It's crazy the way that they all came together and kind of showed their support for him. And then just to see him do that is unreal. It's unheard of.
Yeah. It's that's all I have to say about it.
It's just one of those games, mm-hmm, you get chills.
Mm-hmm. Transition from 2003 to 2005 offseason, Bob Harlan names Ted Thompson executive vice president, general manager, director of football operations with full authority over football decisions. A different era, as I will say. In April of that year, then, Ted drafts Aaron Rodgers in the first round of the 24th pick. I guess this is the time where I became more of a, you know, it was new for me, because Brett Favre was like, I didn't understand Brett Favre, because I'm like, here's a dude, I can tell he loves the game, but he's like throwing the ball around, doing risky stuff. And I'm like, this Aaron Rodgers guy, that's pretty weird that they would draft a quarterback in the first round And you go and look, and it's like Ted Thompson was trying to, you know, make a statement. Also that year in 2005, in that offseason, Reggie White's number 92 is retired. In 2006, one day after the Packers' 23-17 win over the Seattle Seahawks, the Packers' first losing season since 1991, GM Ted Thompson dismisses Mike Sherman on January 2nd. So, hope you had a good New Year's, Mike. You are out the door. And after a nine-day search, the Packers named Mike McCarthy the Packers' 14th head coach, taking him away from the San Francisco Niners as offensive coordinator. 2007, Brett Favre throws his 421st career touchdown pass in a victory in the Metrodome in Minnesota, breaking Dan Marino's career record of 420. He threw it on a 3rd and 7. I rewatched the play last night. It's like a 3rd and 7. He's got two guys lined up left, guy, you know, in the backfield. I believe it's Greg Jennings out right. He gets up to the line. He kind of audibles, talks to the right side of the line, points over to Greg Jennings, and just throws an absolute dart on a post route to Greg Jennings. He essentially walks into the end zone. Just one of those memories, again, you don't forget. And then we go to the 2008 offseason. Brett Favre, the owner of many, many NFL career records, good and bad, mostly good, completions, attempts, yards, touchdowns in the teams.
The Iron Man.
The Iron Man, exactly. Consecutive games, thank you. He announces his retirement in a formal press conference on March 6th at Lambeau. Favre then, maybe, was it 4 or 5 months later, unretires. He's then reinstated by Roger Goodell. He is traded to the New York Jets.
The Jet Favre era.
The Jet Favre era. I was coming to be a freshman in college, and I'm like, Brett Favre's not playing for the Packers anymore. He's playing for the Jets. Okay, sounds good.
This is where I start to remember football.
Yes. So I'm like, I guess, like, I come to UW-Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers takes over as a starting quarterback. I can remember it that way. I've never made those connections. So Brett Favre is traded for a conditional pick, which actually becomes a third-round draft choice. Little research that I found, it took about 3 weeks from the first conversation with Mike Tannenbaum, the New York Jets general manager at the time, for Brett Favre to be traded on August 7th, 2008. Essentially the end of that 90s era, the Ron Wolf era, kind of the last piece of the puzzle. And one of those, you could probably sum up the Packers in 5 names or events, and that would be one of the 5. I think Curly Lambeau would be one, as I said. Brett Favre, we could say Aaron Rodgers, Ron Wolf, maybe Bob Harlan. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here, and he's gone. He's a Jet. Later goes on to play for the Vikings, and we know how that went. Not
very
good.
Dark time. I had a shirt with the circle and the line through it that said Favre.
That's it?
It was, like, I think, okay, my aunt made it for me, and she's a Bears fan, so I think she was enjoying the pain. But even they were like, even the Bears fans were like, what a traitor.
Not good.
So when the Bears are telling you that,
and there was
like, it hurt. I've forgiven him. Sure. I still love him. Mm-hmm. But he went to my hometown team. And it hurt. Because they're all like, we got him.
Yeah.
And it's like.
And that's what they needed. They needed a great quarterback at the time, and they got him. I mean, with all the other players that had around him. And it's a weird thing. People go back and forth. I'm sure that, I mean, maybe at one point there'll be a real, like, documentary on it, or, you know, 30 for 30. But it was really Ted Thompson came in. He didn't want Favre there anymore because Favre couldn't commit to being there. And there was just this internal feud. I do remember when he was traded to the Jets. They were speculating before that where he would go, and somehow the Packers had put in a clause if he went to the Vikings, they had to give them, like, the Vikings had to give the Packers, like, I think it was, like, 3 first-round picks in a row or something just crazy about that. Mm-hmm. Someone please fact-check it, but I swear I remember that. I don't have a fun name for my stat for the 2000s, but we'll call it the duct tape stat because Spencer Havener, they called him duct tape. At least some people call him, because he's just multi-purpose. He can do everything. So
he fixes everything.
He does. Exactly. You got it. So I'm a big fan of guys that can do multiple things at multiple positions.
He's like a utility player.
You're catching it. I love it. You're catching it. He's like an Ian Kinsler, if you will, of baseball. So Spencer Havener in 2006 is signed to the Green Bay Packers practice squad on October 15th. He's added to the active roster because the Packers are actually, or the Bears are rumored they actually want him. December 2009, he makes the transition from linebacker to tight end. That's where he flips on the other side of the ball. He plays in that 2009 season. He starts one game, plays in all 16, has four touchdowns. This is where it gets underwhelming. On seven grabs and 112 yards. It was just, I remember it was like a small piece of pie during that season where he had like four games in a row where he had touchdowns. And like, dude, this guy's awesome. He's like number like 43 or some stupid number, like 46.
You're like, 40. How is this guy out here catching touchdowns?
I'm like, what is this dude doing? It was like that weird phase two, you know, again, 2006. We said Favre, you know, leaves the Packers 2008. It's like that end of Brett's like era where you're like
end of Brett, beginning of Aaron. Yeah, kind of awkward, like what do we get excited about here? Apparently this guy.
Spencer Havener's catching tutties. So that's all I have for the 2000s. Let's get to the 2010s or the teens or the 10s or
2010s, 20-teens.
20-teens sounds more clever.
The 10s.
Right. What do you have for now?
Yes, yeah, so
the present.
2010, the year that I fully invested myself in football. And it was good timing too. Because the 2010-2011 season, Packers make a Super Bowl run as a wild card team. I think they're the only wild card teams since, like, and I don't remember who before them, but nobody's won a wild card, like the Super Bowl, in a wild card position since the Packers. So February 6th, 2011, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers beat the Steelers in the Super Bowl to bring the Lombardi back to Title Town once more, since Brett Favre. And
I was there.
You were there?
I was there.
Really?
I promise, I was there.
Wow. Well, I'm jealous.
Pretty incredible.
I remember just going through this season, all of a sudden, like, I was sitting downstairs in the basement watching football with my dad, asking him questions like, what does this call mean? What's the play they're running? So it was the year, and I have Jordy Nelson to thank a lot for it because I was like, I like this guy.
He's
and
cute.
Then, and basically, but then I'll go back and I'll watch these games and I'm like, Jordy, what are you doing dropping that ball? Mm-hmm. Like, that's routine for you. So
you're talking about the Super Bowl?
Just like the playoff games too leading up to it. It's like, what are you doing? But he was Aaron Rodgers' first touchdown in the Super Bowl. So, yes, an exciting game. Nick Collins with the touchdown, which
great play. That play was so fun. Howard Green was signed, I think, halfway through the year, just this big journeyman of a defensive tackle, and tips Roethlisberger's arm, and Collins goes and catches it like he's like a center fielder, just like on the sideline and grabs it, and just the angle and the pursuit he took back, and everyone, all other 10 guys besides Howard Green, who's probably just a blob of a human being on Ben Roethlisberger. The other 9 guys are, everyone's fine to do to block, and just Collins just dives in. That was, it's one of my favorite plays.
It's a play that still makes me salty in the sense that they flagged him for celebrating on his knees.
Good.
I'm like, it is the Super Bowl, and he, like, I'm sorry that he's celebrating.
Janelle, rules are rules. You need to follow the rules.
It just frustrates me. Like, let him be excited. It's the Super Bowl, and he just scored. And they flag him for it. I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, I don't think they cared, but I obviously still care.
It's really,
I still
get, it's so petty to throw a flag at that point.
I still get very, very upset, but I can picture it. He's on his knees with his arms out, and Clay Matthews is kind of like grabbing his shoulders, like, oh, the vision, like, that game. So, yes, fun game. Aaron Rodgers wins the MVP award. Matthews is up there with the belt for him. Things are looking good in Green Bay. And then I kind of jumped to the 2014 season.
Okay.
The Packers start with a 1-2 record. Everybody's freaking out.
Panic button.
Panic button. And Aaron Rodgers says 5 simple letters, RELAX. And they go on to have a 12-4 record and a first-round bye in the playoffs. Now they obviously don't do anything with it. They didn't win the Super Bowl that year, but still. I remember, like, t-shirts and the fences were painted and relax was just written all over the world. Like, absolutely insane. Yeah,
no, people ran with it.
And then, I mean, it became his thing, apparently. I'll get to that in years to come. But between his famous phrases, there was the miracle in Motown, which this game still, every time I see this play, every time I see a picture of it, I get chills. This is where the Packers are playing Detroit, in Detroit, and I remember rushing home. I remember this day vividly. So it's when I played intramurals.
Okay.
So
intramural
football. Okay. Yep. QB1. Yep. So respect. I'm out there doing my best Aaron Rodgers impressions, and I remember we had the game DVRing, and I don't like to know the scores of games or anything like that until I can watch it. So I'm not looking at my phone. We get there. I'm staying off social media. And we finally get back to my friend's house, and they play the game. So I'm like, nobody tell me anything. Just let me watch it. Just let me experience everything. And we're watching. Things are kind of not looking good. And all of a sudden, I get a text from my dad. No. I can't believe they're losing. I'm like, Dad, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like the golden rule in my family. If we're not watching, like, we don't text. Like, at my house, we'll text family members, like, we had to go dark. We're not watching the game. Mm-hmm. Don't text me scores. And my dad just breaks the rule.
Two things. One, I've never done that for a game ever because I don't have the self-control not to watch a sporting event of my team or any team. Two, your dad's name's Mr. Mackey then, right?
Mr. Mackey?
From, like, South Park?
I have never watched South Park. Right. I mean, some people would, get that, some people won't. Yes, my dad would technically
That's
be
fine.
Mr. Mackey.
Continue.
But yeah, so I remember this day vividly because I remember my dad ruining it for me, and I just looked at everyone and I was like, just fast forward. I know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously this game was a little bit frustrating. And then the end, like, Mr. Miracle Man, Aaron Rodgers comes in, the face masking call.
Yeah.
Gets them one more chance. There's no time on the clock. He throws an absolute bomb into the rafters, and Richard Rodgers comes down with it. Like, you look at the pictures, and just, like, I'm not a scientist or a mathematician, but I'm trying to figure out the logic on, like, how, like, his, just the way his body looks and the way the ball is released.
We need John Brinkus in sports science to break down the angle and the velocity and, the downward thrust.
I would love if I could find a video of that.
There has to be one.
The Packers are literally winning 0 seconds of this game, and they win 27-23.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely insane. Definitely, like, when I was thinking about this era, like, aside from the Super Bowl, that's what I think of. I have never jumped out of my seat so hard, just, like, at home like that. Like, absolutely insane.
Yeah,
like, I couldn't even believe it. I'm, like, FaceTiming my family and, like, getting hyped. And it's just, like, nobody can believe that. I also have that newspaper above my bed. So, obviously, it was an important game if it's framed above my bed. That's kind of how you know. So then, after that, like, here comes a little bit of a struggle mm-hmm. season. Aaron Rodgers comes out again. He struggling. Four straight losses. They're at a 4-6 record in 2016. And all of a sudden, Aaron Rodgers comes out. He's just like, yeah, I think we can run the table. Very casual. No energy. He's
Print the shirts. Print the shirts. Run the table.
Yeah. He's all of a sudden, he's just like, I feel like we can run the table. He had the right feeling. They go on to win 6 straight. They get a wild card spot, which brings me into my next couple games. Like, this was a great, great year of football.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. It was very exciting. Like, you feel every emotion because all of a sudden you're really struggling. 4-game losing streak. You're like, what is going on? These are the Packers. These are the good days. These things aren't supposed to happen. And they turn it around and they get the wild card spot. And they get to host the Giants at Lambeau. And I remember getting a notification from the Packer app, tickets still available. And I look at my dad, I'm like, hey, Dad, there's tickets still available, like, hint, hint. And he's just like, Okay.
That's exactly how I pulled it out with my dad for the Super Bowl. Like, yeah. So they beat Atlanta. Well, we kind of joked about it because my dad had gone with my mom to 96. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we joked about it for Atlanta.
You gotta go so that they win.
Yeah, they joked about it for Atlanta. And then, like, the end of that first half where we get the touchdown, like, the defensive touchdown, I'm like, damn, this might be real. And then they win. And then you're looking and you're like, dude, we gotta play the Bears with, like, Chris. Whoever the heck it was, like Haney or whatever. I don't remember the guy's name. And I'm like, this is a lock. I mean,
yeah.
Wasn't. So that was awesome.
Yeah.
Harassing your father for tickets for a game is the best way.
It wasn't even harassing him. I was just like, hey, Dad, there's still tickets available. And my family has always talked about going to a game together. There's six of us. It's kind of hard to get us all together to go to a game. And my dad literally that night bought six tickets. Like, we're texting in our family. Like, my sister lives.
Mr. Mackey
coming in clutch, yes. So, the Mackeys drive out to Lambeau, and we're tailgating. We're like, oh my gosh, this is real. This is real. The flyover happens, and we're in our seats and kind of nervous because mm-hmm. it wasn't looking that great. And then Mr. Aaron Rodgers again comes in, another Hail Mary in the end zone that I'm sitting in. And it's just like, that's something I'm very thrilled to be able to cross off my bucket list, seeing an Aaron Rodgers Hail Mary in person.
In the playoffs.
At Lambeau. Yes.
With your family.
Yep. Literally the only downside of that game was the fact that I had to watch Jordy Nelson get carted off due to broken ribs. That broke my heart a lot. But yeah, great game, which leads them to Dallas. And Dallas is the hot team this year.
Mm-hmm.
Elliott and Prescott, they're rookie, like, they're on fire. And this is another game that just, oh, it's beautiful. I mean, like, with, I don't remember how much time. I want to say, like, maybe 11 seconds left. Rodgers scrambles and finds Cook.
Yeah, that
and just
draws
like,
it up in the sand.
I don't even understand, like, I can't even think of how he caught that. Like, you just see the picture, the still frame, and you're trying to, like, think about the logic behind, like, the gravity, and you're just like, how?
We seriously need John Brinkus.
I know.
We got to get him.
Yes, we need to have him
and his
on the podcast and explain all this stuff.
Him and his a lot of like hair gel. hair. You know what I'm talking about? Isn't it?
Yeah.
And then he does the hand thing where he's, I'm John Brinkus.
Like, the science. Like, it's just not there.
It's not.
But it's Aaron Rodgers
mm-hmm.
and his receivers making great plays.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mason Crosby puts the nail in the coffin on the Cowboys. Stellar season. And they beat them 34-31. And I remember all the madness because the way the ball looked, I think they called the Cowboys called the timeout. And then Crosby goes and makes it again. Mm-hmm. And the way that ball moved, like,
didn't look like it was going to go. And then it did. And then it was a couple times where you're like,
you're like, oh my gosh, like all the Packer fans are like blowing to try and push the ball. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember Skip Bayles, like, just, I had to, like, mute him on Twitter. I couldn't handle the things he was saying, but it great game. Unfortunately, yeah, I don't even want to talk about
it. Yeah, brush over that last part, please.
Yeah, they didn't win the Super Bowl. We're gonna move on. So the final big game that I could think of in this era was this year
mm-hmm.
when Aaron Rodgers comes back after a knee injury. I was at this game, too, if you remember me talking about it and, like, freaking out.
You blogged about it.
Podcast, blogging, like, everything, every emotion. Just watching him get hurt, and my buddy's sitting next to me, and he's like, I can't do it again. I can't have a season without him again, which is
true. I laid on the floor.
After a Brett Hundley season, like, yeah. We suffered one bad year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, I can't do it.
I laid on the floor at my girlfriend's place, face down underneath the TV with my arm in my, or my head in my arm for the whole halftime.
Yeah.
The entire halftime.
I
had waited that whole day for Sunday Night Football.
Football at Lambeau, 100 seasons.
I'm just eating like
playing the Bears.
I'm eating like a jackass all day. I'm drinking. I'm just like, this is great. And just very casual.
Like,
very
Aaron Rodgers is back. It's
not
and then
good.
And then he gets hurt. And you're just like, no.
No. Nope.
Please, God, no. And he comes back, and, like, Lambeau Field, everybody's just staring at that tunnel,
mm-hmm.
and he jogs, and all of a sudden it's just, like, the place lit up. And then Aaron Rodgers and the Packers lit up,
mm-hmm.
and they come out, and they beat them 24-23. They went on, like, a I think they had 21 points in the fourth quarter. Like, absolutely insane. And that is the third newspaper hanging above my bed.
There it is.
So I have Super Bowl 31, the Miracle in Motown, and then Aaron Rodgers coming back and beating the Bears. And it's just like, what a great, great decade.
You got some
of
good
football.
Stuff. Yeah, that is
a great decade of football. And we have one more year of it.
Yes, we do.
We have one more year this decade, so hopefully it's a good one.
And it's the newest era under the Matt LaFleur 5-year plan with Aaron Rodgers under his deal.
Yeah.
This episode has gone very long. We're going to have to wrap it up, I think. But
we could obviously talk about this forever.
I'm on the Facebook Marketplace right now, and there is an RV for sale for $1,600 that I'm considering turning into a Packer mobile. Anyone interested, Venmo me, and we'll just, like, go halvesies on it, and we need something that can spray paint. I've wanted one, but, like, look at this here. Like, $1,600 for that?
Beautiful.
A 2005 Coachman.
We can do a traveling podcast.
Awesome.
But, yeah, to wrap up my 20-teens, just a couple important things that happened off the field, or I guess one of them on the field. I'll start with Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson become the best QB receiver duo in Packer history after they connected for their 58th touchdown to pass Brett Favre and Antonio Freeman, and they did so against the Vikings, which
Zingers.
That's what we need. And then in 2016, Brett Favre is inducted into the Hall of Fame. Very important. Kind of makes a statement, like,
yeah, with Bart Starr too. I mean, mm-hmm. they're sitting there together in the rain. That's,
and I think, oof. Like, I remember watching that, and I was just like, I felt like I hated him for a little bit there, but then he comes out and he says, like, make no mistake, I will be remembered as a Packer. And I was like, my man, making sure that they, because obviously they're gonna have his Atlanta and Viking gear in his Canton locker, he made sure that we knew. So that's the end of my decade there. Hopefully this decade ends a little bit better.
We're trending in the right direction.
I wanted to finish as good as it started.
Mm-hmm.
So
cool.
Let's make a trend out of that.
Once again, this was the Pack-A-Day podcast, episode 223. I guess we're about two-thirds of the way through a full year. It's an incredible journey so far. You can find us, as always, on Twitter, at Pack-A-Day podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitch, wherever you can get podcasts from. As always, Janelle reminds me, you can ask Alexa to find it as well. You can find all the episodes also uploaded to Cheesehead TV. They're pretty good friends of the podcast, we'll say. Tomorrow is episode 224. You got Nick, Maggie, and Paul, a couple of the young guns in there. You can find Janelle on Twitter at BigMac_4. You can find me on Twitter at Matt.
Sunday Night Football, the start of a historic season for the Green Bay Packers.
Go Pack, go.
Rodgers in the shotgun. Here's the snap. Rushes on. Rodgers nowhere to go, and he's snowed under. Back inside the 30, and Rodgers is down. Roy Robertson, Harris, Khalil Mack. And Rodgers unable to get up. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Down at 19 from the Green Bay 30. Snap to Kaiser under pressure. Immediately dunks it up right side. It's intercepted. Intercepted by Khalil Mack. Circle route to the 15 to the 10. He's to the 5 to the end zone. Touchdown. Oh, my goodness. Khalil Mack had a sack, fumble recovery, interception return for a touchdown. .914 to go in the third. Chicago 20, Green Bay nothing.
Wayne, I actually see Aaron on the sideline throwing.
Well, that's a good sign. Yep, he is. Of the shotgun, snap to A-Rod. Looking downfield, throws it over the middle. Randall Cobb is there. Makes a spinning grab just outside the left hash mark. J.K. Scott, Mason Crosby. Here's the snap. Placement made. Kick is up. And it is good. So the Packers on the board with 3:37 to go in the third. Snap to A-Rod, looking around and waiting. Lofts it. Deep down the right side. Allison in the end zone. Makes a spectacular catch. Touchdown.
What a throw and what a catch.
And the Packers get back into it. 39-yard bomb from Aaron Rodgers. Corey Linsley on the snap. Four-man line for the Bears. They're coming on a blitz up the middle. They pick it up. Rodgers looks. Lost. Left side. Got a man out there. Good. To Rodgers under a blitz. Rodgers tight pocket, steps up, throws a left, got Devontae inside the 10, head fake, cuts left to the 5, reaches, pylon, and touchdown! Oh, what a play by Devontae Adams! Snap to A-Rod. Rushes on, has time. Looking, throws, middle, got it!